This is Joe Burns.
And Chad P.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Rock School Podcast.
We think you'll learn something.
Now remember, if you want to hear the show with all the music in place, go to KSLU.org and stream the show live, Thursdays at 5.
And Sundays at 4.
It's a new show every week.
Now enjoy this week's Rock School Radio Show.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
It's time for school. Rock School. With your hosts, Dr. Joe Burns.
I'm so upset about Susan Boyle, I just don't know what to do with myself.
And Chad P.
You better give this lady some R-S-P-E-C-T. Aretha Franklin hits number one with Respect. What are you laughing at?
You misspelled respect.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh my word, I did!
Class is in.
I'm so upset about Susan Boyle, I just don't know what to do with myself. This is Rock School, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Joe Burns, a professor in the communication department when I'm not taking the entire summer off to do, I don't know, cut the grass, stare at the walls, watch bad TV. The gentleman sitting next to me is at work. His name is?
Well, they call me Diversity P.
Oh, yes, you won the, what is that, Britain's Got Talent?
We got talent, yeah.
I saw it. Apparently they don't. Okay, now, I'm watching this show on VH1. It's the top 50, 100, what have you, hard rock songs of all time.
I'm going to go on record right now and let you know that if you lose your cable, the show will be over. Because 95% of all of our Rock School episodes come from VH1.
Not
true. Is. Okay, 96%.
No, it's a little less than that. But yeah, I do watch a lot of those rock channels. I really do. I've given up on MTV, but the VH1s still have it. As I'm watching this, the year 1980 continually was brought up. This happened tonight. This happened in 1980. This happened in 1980. Then Lars Ulrich finally just comes out and says it. And then 1980 was just the year for heavy metal. And I went, okay, I got to go look it up. So I jump on the internet and I just put in heavy metal 1980. And it just like an avalanche all over the place.
Well, you know, 1980 was the greatest year of the history of the world.
And who was born in 1980? Go ahead.
Me!
Oh, fantastic. So over here is our lump of heavy metal who will go along with this.
He called me a lump.
And a lump sits alone in a parking lot. It says here, on my notes, I'm just stunned at how many bands that we consider part of the music landscape debuted. How many people left groups and broke out as singer debuts? How many brand new singers came in? How many truly classic bands came into existence? How many truly classic albums came into existence in 1980?
Well,
let's begin. I mean, I've got 25 of them here, really about 12 that you could name off the top of your head. Let's begin.
Okay.
Maybe, not the top-selling one of 1980, but maybe the most, I don't know what if you would call it the most musically influential or not, but Judas Priest's British Steel came out in 1980. Now, they had a lot of good albums in the 70s, but Rob Halford and the group put out this album. They called it British Steel because they named it after, you know, the major company that made steel there in Britain, obviously British Steel, released it at a discount price and sold it as British Steel, S-T-E-A-L. But what is so great about this is it ushered in the second coming of British heavy metal. No longer was it Black Sabbath type stuff. Long, slow, thick, minor, distorted, war pigs type stuff.
Well, they sped it up to where it was running like 80 miles an hour, right?
Catchy, Breaking the Law, Living After Midnight, things like that. But furthermore, as was brought out by a lot of critics, no longer was it blues-based. It seems on this album, heavy metal no longer owed itself to the blues. It became a genre in and of itself. It became hit-based. It became accessible to a music audience rather than just those that loved heavy metal.
Rock.
So we begin. The year 1980 and the metal groups that made it what it was. You'll be stunned at how many groups and albums you know. Living After Midnight, Rock School. That album, British Steel, and I always wondered, because you see the hand on the front of the album holding the giant razor blade, why doesn't he cut himself? We're talking about 1980 and the heavy metal that came out that year. Let me give you a debut of a group you have known. In 1980, no one had ever heard of Def Leppard before March 14th, and then the album On Through the Night came out. Produced by Tom Allom, best known for his work with Judas Priest.
Yeah.
You see how I followed one with the other? That's professional radio.
How about that?
There was a guy with the group by the name of Pete Willis. Ever heard of him?
No.
He wrote for this album, wrote almost all the guitar parts for this album, wrote for their second album, High and Dry, and wrote a good many of the hits on their third album, Pyromania, the one that, I mean, just went kaboom. With Photograph on it and all the other hits.
Okay.
Where'd he go? Well, apparently he liked the drink.
Oh, that's where he went.
Right.
He went to the local watering hole.
Well, didn't they all drink? Yeah, but apparently he was really a bit of a jerk about the whole thing. Mm. So Def Leppard comes out in 1980. Listen to this. You think to yourself, how old are these kids? The youngest is Rick Allen, the drummer.
Yeah.
Still two arms at this time. 16.
16?
16. The oldest, Joe Elliott. He's barely under 19. He's 18, but he's almost 19.
Wow.
This is a bar band at best. And this is the kind of stuff they're putting out from their first album. Now, the big hit was Hello America. And I say hit, I'm making finger quotes. But this is one of the better ones. This is the one that leaned more towards the metal, since we're talking about the metal in 1980. This is Wasted, one of the first times you heard Def Leppard. Rock School.
You know, you were talking a while ago about how this genre of music kind of defined itself, where they were no longer blues-based. You can almost give every song an identity of 80s music, kind of like whenever we were doing the Motown show.
Right.
You know, you could single-handedly pick out three out of the five songs, which ones are Motown.
Sure.
That is so stereotypical 80s tune right there
We
just played, because you can just hear it.
And you can also hear that was a young band.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a true heavy metal band would not write a song called Wasted. Right.
Wasting my time.
An 18-year-old kid would write a song called Wasted because
it's called Wasted.
Yeah.
I was wasted when I wrote it.
Yeah, we're all drunk.
You know, you wouldn't get that. That's not really what metal is about. You know, metal is more interested in society and things like that. You don't get a lot of, you know, I'm wasted, you know, oh, the girls and all that. It really is. It leans more towards societal ills and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Black Sabbath in 1979 loses Ozzy.
Uh-oh.
What are we going to do?
Uh-oh.
Well, they went out and they got this guy named Ronnie James Dio, who has a leather throat. And they came out in 1980, the year of metal, on April 25th, and put out the album Heaven and Hell.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Van Halen ripped them off.
Did they now?
Yes, they did. If you look at the front cover of the album Heaven and Hell, it has a series of three angels smoking a cigarette.
Okay.
You look at the front of the 1984 album from Van Halen, it has an angel smoking a cigarette.
Aww.
Jeff Nichols of Quartz joins the band at this point in time because Geezer Butler, who was a lyricist for Black Sabbath, Right. Geezer Butler.
Geezer.
Yeah, going through a divorce at the time and crawled inside of a bottle. He says he doesn't remember, you know, recording much of the album.
You think?
He actually was able to get through it and join the band. However, Nichols hung around and started playing keyboards. Ronnie James Dio can really be given the moniker of the guy who brought keyboards into heavy metal.
Okay.
Did it on his own, did it with Ozzy Osbourne. Bill Ward, however, did complete the album, but his drinking got really bad, and Vinny Appice, Carmen Appice's brother, would actually have to finish the tour for them. So the album Black Sabbath, Heaven and Hell comes out, and Wishing Well is my favorite off of this. I own the album. I didn't have to download this. I loved it. You don't get this a lot today with CDs, but when you used to buy vinyl, you had two lead songs. See, on a CD, you put it in, you get one lead song.
Yeah.
On vinyl, you got two. Because you had to flip it over.
Right.
This was the lead song's second side. This is Wishing Well. This is the first time people bought the album, popped that thing on, dropped the needle, and went, can they do it without Ozzy? You tell me. Here's Ronnie James Dio in front of Black Sabbath. Wishing Well, Rock School.
Wishing Well, oh, Wishing Well, I wish that we will have success without Ozzy.
Well, and they did. They had a little bit, and I think that was a great album. I thought it was absolutely wonderful. The problem is, Ozzy found this guitarist.
Oh, I know his name.
And that year decided to come out with his own album.
Now we got a tennis match of metal.
Oh, yeah, and it will get back and forth and back and forth.
Love 30!
That's right, and one of them decides to have, oh, I don't know, a better career. We got to take a quick break. You want to write to us? We don't give the email enough, I don't think. Chad, what is it?
It's KSLURockSchool@gmail.com. KSLURockSchool@gmail.com. And speaking of doing a little business, we'd like to thank one of our many affiliates.
Many.
KLSU 91.1 down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Thank you so much for running Rock School.
Fantastic. And, of course, iTunes. Always iTunes. You can get us there 24/7. I believe they never close.
No, they don't.
Yeah, there's no locks on the door. But they do have that thing right there when you walk out that shows how tall you are. I always stop and put my hand on top of my head. Oh, look, I haven't shrunk. Back in a minute. Rock School.
So here you got Ozzy Osbourne kind of wandering around. He's not in Black Sabbath. And where does he meet Mr. Rhodes?
Well, he had a lot of guitarists that auditioned for him.
Okay.
And what's really funny is if you read the thing, Sharon Osbourne, who takes over Ozzy Osbourne, leaves her father.
Yeah.
Her father is a...
Right, I remember we talked about this.
During the Record Producer Show. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if you want to hear the Record Producer Show, KSLU.org. Look for the Rock School sticker on the right-hand side. Look down the entire episode list. You'll see it, the producer and rock manager show, and you'll see it there.
It's a good transition, by the way.
Thank you very much. Leaves her father, takes Ozzy because, you know, she sees he's going to be, you know, a massive millionaire rock star in about 15 minutes.
She saw the potential.
And decides to go into guitars. She said when Randy Rhoads showed up, she thought he was a girl.
What?
Because he was apparently, in her eyes, so beautiful, he was too pretty to be a boy. Honest to goodness.
Wow.
So Randy Rhoads shows up. You see, in the early 1980s, guitarists who really research how the guitar took off, there was Hendrix.
Yes.
And then the world tried to be Hendrix. And the guitar sort of stayed in a The Who, a Hendrix, a Beatles method. There were ways to play. And then Van Halen came out. And the world got turned on its ear. And what a lot of people don't realize is that Van Halen didn't play from a classical standpoint. He did a lot of tricks and a lot of things on the fretboard. It wasn't until Randy Rhoads came out that really the classical influence, this guy was so well-versed in music. And when you listen to him, there is such a classical influence. He would really, I know this is going to sound like I'm lying to you, but he would, at every stop that he had time, would take a classical lesson.
I remember you told me about this.
He would. He would. The road manager would find a teacher, yeah. I guess. And that teacher would take an hour and teach him something new. And in the book I just read by Rudy Sarzo, Off the Rails and the Crazy Train with Ozzy Osbourne, there were many times that he hated it because the classical guitar teacher was just a fan and wanted to ask questions. But many times he would find a guy that would teach him something new. It was Rhodes who really brought into heavy metal this classical influence, and Osbourne had him for two albums. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't his death that made him leave. There were, you know, he was going to leave after the album anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going to go off on his own. But it was 1980. We're talking about the metal of 1980 and this album, Blizzard of Oz. September 20th, it comes out. It's the solo debut of Ozzy Osbourne, and guitarists turned their head and went, what? Who's that guy? Randy Rhodes, Ozzy, Crazy Train, Rock School.
When Ozzy laughs right here, he's...
And then he curses.
He's laughing at Black Sabbath.
He might be. He might be. Yeah, did you know he curses there?
What?
I'm thinking about doing...
What does he say?
Well, he says the... He goes, ha, 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 B-word, B-word.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking about doing a show about songs that curse that you don't know they curse.
Oh, I know one.
Oh, I know a bunch of them.
Hey,
yeah,
that's cool. Let's not do that.
Yeah, because it would mean a lot of work for you.
Yeah.
Plus, how could we actually prove it? Yeah, running with the devil. Running with the devil curses.
What?
There's the, yeah, he says GD in Running with the Devil. There's the F word inside of Sweet Home Alabama.
Oh, what about the one, Who Are You?
He says the F word twice in Who Are You, and most people don't even know it.
There's the F word that I know of that nobody, I mean, even the station manager over here.
In REM.
Know. In REM. What's the frequency, Kenneth?
Yeah, it's done so quick, nobody even gets it.
Mm-hmm.
So
how do we get off that topic?
Yeah, well, let's quickly go on. We're at the bottom of the hour. My name is Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P.
We are doing metal in the year 1980. It was apparently a banner year, and when we come out of 7 days and 70 seconds, the album that sold 22 million in sales.
Woo.
Let's do the week that was way back when, June 1st through June 7th, Monday through Sunday. Chad, if you would.
I will. On June 1st in 1951, Jackie Brenston's Rocket 88 hits number one on the R&B chart. It was widely acknowledged as the first rock and roll record.
It isn't, not in my mind. In 1962, on June 2nd, the Island label releases its first single, founded by in London by Chris Blackwell. Only weeks before, the label becomes the first indie label in history, and then is sold to PolyGram in 1989.
On June 3rd, 1967, you better give this lady some R-S-P-E-C-T. Aretha Franklin hits number one with Respect. What are you laughing at?
You misspelled Respect.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, my word, I did!
Okay, we're doing well. June 4th, back in 1942, Capitol Records is launched in Los Angeles.
Okay, and on June 5th in 1971, Grand Funk Railroad's Shea Stadium show sold out in 72 hours and made $306,000. You know, that's $4,250 an hour. How'd you like to have that pay rate?
It is, and what's amazing is that was before, you know, the computerization of it. It was literally money across the desk.
Wow.
That's what's so amazing about it. June 6, 1990, a federal judge in Florida declares two live crews, as nasty as they want to be, to be legally obscene. And then Sunday, the 7th, back in 1993, Pete Townsend, Chuck Berry, both attend the groundbreaking ceremony for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum in lovely downtown Cleveland, Ohio, The Mistake on the Lake. As we continue with heavy metal albums in 1980, this one comes out July 25th. This band should have been dead. Should have been dead in the water.
Ooh.
Bon Scott decided to drink himself to death at the age of 33.
AC/DC.
Yep, February 19th. The thing was, the band said, no, no, we're not dead. We need to honor Bon Scott by continuing forward. So they hired this guy named Brian Johnson.
Oh, yeah, the gravel voice.
And Brian Johnson wrote songs. Apparently, Bon Scott, now I'm only telling you what Brian Johnson said, Bon Scott appears to him in a dream and gives him lyrics to appear on the album. Is it any good? Well, it's now sold to this date 22 million copies.
Hey, Spirit of Bon Scott, you can come see me in a dream.
Anytime you want. What
Tell
do
me
you
how
do?
To spell respect.
What do you do for money, honey? How do you get your kicks? From the Back in Black album, it came out July 25th, 1980. Rock School. It's time to retire the schoolboy outfit.
Yeah.
It really is. On the last tour, it's what is the latest album? Is it Black Ice?
I think it is. Black Ice.
Yeah. On the last tour, they showed a couple pictures of him, Angus Young.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know how else to put it. He just kind of looked creepy.
Get a new wardrobe.
Yeah. I think it's time to retire the outfit. We're talking 1980 and all the metal albums that came out in 1980. Iron Maiden. They've been around forever, haven't they?
Forever and a day.
Oh, yeah. They came out in the late 60s, early 70s. Wrong. Their debut album came out April 14th, 1980.
Well, that's when the album came out, but they could have been playing, you know, garage parties and everything before that.
I understand what you're saying, but when the debut album comes out, that's really when the world is introduced to them.
Fair enough.
You know, there's going to be a local audience. And, of course, Bruce Dickinson has it. Go ahead. Bruce Dickinson got it.
I got a
fever. That's right, for the cowbell. Bruce Dickinson obviously was their lead singer from the beginning, right? Wrong.
No.
No, their lead singer at the beginning was a guy named Paul Di'Anno. D-I-apostrophe-A-N-N-O. Now, he did a solid job. He's a very good lead singer. It's just they weren't the band until, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Judas Priest didn't have Rob Halford as their original lead singer.
Gotcha.
It just didn't come alive until that.
Yep.
The original album, Iron Maiden, comes out April 14th, 1980, introduces the world to Eddie, and comes out with a bunch of songs. Those who are fans of Iron Maiden, I'm kind of a half fan. I like some of their stuff. I've always said I like Uriah. If I had to pick two, Iron Maiden, Uriah Heep, I'm a Uriah Heep fan.
Mm-hmm.
I really like them. If you're looking for twin guitars and fast, Opera, Running Free, Sanctuary, and Iron Maiden. Those are the songs off of the debut album that people really know, but the hits are the ones that come later. In 1980, the world gets introduced to the band and Eddie. This is the title track, Iron Maiden, Rock School.
I love songs that end like that.
No,
I really
does
do.
Does it fly with Di'Anno singing? I think you need Dickinson singing in there. It's not Aces High. It's not Run for the Hills. You know what I mean?
It's not the voice.
It's not the voice. It's like hearing a bootleg of your favorite band when they had an old singer.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It just doesn't, to me, it just doesn't fly. And I know, you know, Iron Maiden fans are the top of their heads are coming off right now. But, yeah, it just doesn't fly for me. We're coming up. We're going to do a break, right?
Yes.
Coming out, we're going to do a band that had an album that most people know one or two songs off of, but it was their U.S. debut. And again, it was one of those that when it came out, a name came into the common vernacular of heavy metal and never left. Everybody knows it, and you'll know it when we say it. Hello, Radio Universidad, Salamanca, Spain. Thanks for running Rock School.
And also, hello, KSCL up the street in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Right. Thank you for running Rock School.
Thank you.
Back in a minute, Rock School.
Play that bed because I know you like it.
I know. I think that's fantastic. That and the Simpsons bed that you have. I think that's wonderful.
Gotta get that bed back. I lost it.
We are we're running out of time, so let me tell you some of the other albums that we're blatantly not going to get to. In 1980, in the world of metal, the Angel Witch album came out by, obviously, Angel Witch. By the way, an earlier version of the group Angel Witch had Iron Maiden's Bruce Dickinson in it.
Ooh.
Plasmatics, New Hope for the Wretched came out. Samson's album Head On came out. Speed Queen's album Speed Queen came out. Fist put out their album Turn the Heck On. I'm saying heck instead of the actual word. Gillian's album came out. Accept put out I'm a Rebel. And Crocus put out Metal Rendezvous. I owned that album. The Michael Schenker Group put out MSG. Oh, that was a great album. Rush put out Permanent Waves, and Van Halen put out Women and Children First. Now this one, did you want to pick something up?
Yes, please. Let me get those paper clips.
Okay.
Anything
else you want over there?
Let me get that thing right there.
The U.S. debut of Motorhead comes out October 27th in 1980, Ace of Spades. First Motorhead album, obviously, to be put out in the United States. However, they have had a few albums and some success in the U.K. That Freudian slip was probably correct as well.
Yeah,
Loud, Raw, Vic Mail put the whole thing together. And according to Lemmy, he was the first guy that was able to get Lemmy to sing instead of shout the whole time. Now, you could
I don't know how
play...
he did that. I would be scared to ask Lemmy to pass me that jar of peanuts right there for fear of what that man would do to me.
Every time I've seen him interviewed, he always seems to be a nice guy. That's what's so funny, is a lot of these heavy metal guys, you see them on stage and they look like they could literally eat nails spit tacks. But then you see them interviewed and it's like, could I get a cup of tea over there? It almost seems like Ronnie James Dio. You expect him to, you know, excuse me, could I have a demon to bring me a hamburger? And when you speak to him, he sounds like he's going to lecture on the literature of early, you know, early British writers. It's amazing.
It's actually called Milwaukee.
That's right. It's the good earth. Motorhead from the album Ace of Spades. This is Fast and Loose, Rock School.
Telling you, I would not be able to do it. I'd be like, okay, Lemmy, it's a really silly thing, you know. It's the producers. They said something about.
I'll bet he's not that way.
He's probably not, but the man is by far the scariest looking human being on the planet.
That same year, 1980, in heavy metal, the same management team that managed Motorhead also brought out an all-girl or all-female heavy metal band called Girl School.
Mm.
And their debut album came out that same year in May. Demolition was its name. And trying to think of... they supported, if I'm not mistaken, Black Sabbath and Uriah Heep that year. And the reason I know that is because I've actually started to become a fan of a new group called the Donnas.
Oh, yeah, the Donnas.
Yeah, the Donnas actually stated that it was Girl School that was such a large influence on them. So if you can get a hold of that, their first album was called Demolition. All right, let me tell you some other ones, because we got one more to play, and we're going to wrap up on that. Saxon's Wheels of Steel came out that year in May 1980. And what else do I have here? I think that's it. More came out, but those are the ones that were really straightforward, really heavy metal, and just that year, it seems that metal came into its own and disco had finished and the world was looking for something new. And it was soon after that, in the 1980s, that the Sunset Strip kind of exploded. The metal became more pop and such, but it was, you know, it was this year that really metal exploded.
I'll tell you this, it's got, I've got to continuously remind myself that we're getting ready to go into the year 2010, so this is going on 30 years ago.
Oh yeah.
And there will, I'm sure that there
Metallica
will be,
Metallica is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
It goes way back.
I'm more than positive that there will be more times that where music genres are defined. You know, people will remember the 90s or the 2000s or what have you, however they're going to refer to it as. But to me, the 1980s, and maybe I'm a little biased because that was the year, the years that I began existence.
Yeah, well, those are the years I grew up through.
The 1980s. Ruled. There are no other way to say it. They
ruled. Did for me too. I was a fan of the music of the 70s, but it was the 80s I grew up through. I never liked all the new wave stuff. Oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you're so fine. I never liked that kind of music. I liked the harder stuff from behind. So we're going to wrap up with a band that put out an album that year. One of many. They had lots of albums beforehand. They had been releasing albums actually for 8 years, as I look at my notes before this, if I do my mathematics correctly. Animal Magnetism was the album. It came out on March 31st, and like every Scorpions album, Chad's giving the double Demon sign there. Animal Magnetism, like every other Scorpions album, had a cover that got them into real trouble. I'm not going to describe it, but if you want, go ahead, take a look at it. It is just as you expected, nice and dirty. It's their seventh studio album, and we're going to play one off it that was a big hit both here and obviously in their native Germany and most of Europe. This is called The Zoo. My name is Joe Burns.
I'm Chad P.
Class is dismissed.